Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. I'm Larry Hardesty of ESPN New York 98.7 FM. I have the pleasure of talking to you about the man you're about to listen to, Doc Stanley, the legendary Doc Stanley. I always say before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. When you listen to Doc Stanley, you have to appreciate the knowledge, the connection. When he's at the ballpark during baseball, he's around the water cooler talking to the athletes. When he's at the basketball games, he's in the locker room talking to players, talking to general managers, talking to front office personnel to bring you the insight why people make the decisions they make. When he's on the ice skating rink, he's talking to some of the few African-American, African-Canadian, African players who are on the ice right now making a difference. You are listening to Doc Stanley on Sports in Depth.
Live radio on the Trust in God Radio Networks. It's Sports in Depth, Sunday Sports Man. And as always, the iconic, legendary John Coltrane's Dear Lord is our entrance into prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will, have your way. Thank you, Lord, the little thing that we so largely take for granted, dear Lord. And we ask you, Lord, not to give us what we want, but give us what we need. And we hope that what we need is also what we want. And we need thee every hour. And we just want to pay all homage to you, the one and only true God. And ask these blessings, all the blessings, in your holy name, the Lord. In Jesus' name, the Lord. Amen. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trusted God Radio Network. A lot of things happening. One of the things today, Usain Bolt, after crossing the winning line, a lightning bolt struck. And the world's fastest man also had the lightning to support that. The Yankees take a series here as they beat the Detroit Tigers and worked upon Jason Verlander. Mariano Rivera, who had a couple of save opportunities gone, wound up being the winning pitcher today as Gardner hit the game-winning home run and A-Rod. He hit a home run today, first home run in a long, long time. Got another hit And the rest, they say, is history. Yankees take the series, beat Detroit today 5-4. And uncharacteristically, back-to-back home runs given up by Mariano Rivera. But in the ninth inning, Gardner, bam, there it go, long drive, bang, bang, and the Yankees win the series and the game 5-4. And, well, see what things happens from here. And other things happening around, as you know, the Jets lost their preseason opening game on Friday, and the Giants won their preseason opening game on Saturday. And getting right into NFL football right now, the man is the right arm of Coach Rex Ryan, and maybe he winds up being the third-string quarterback eventually. But this NFL 411, and also Cincinnati Sea Wings. Wings, things kind of predicted as you thought they would be. You know, Jets losing their first preseason game and the Giants winning their first preseason game. It was a good sign. I mean, they won and they beat the team on the road and they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. Preseason is preseason, but a win that doesn't count, but it means a lot psychologically.
I mean, when you look at, let's just break down the Jets first. With the quarterback competition, it's still wide open. I mean, you look at, I still think that Sanchez has the power of experience. He's been in the league a lot longer. He seems to be picking up Morning Hayes, West Coast offense. Pretty decent. The offensive line still needs some work, but if you saw in the game, they were giving the quarterbacks a little bit more protection, giving them that extra second or so to throw the ball. But as we see with Sanchez, he threw the pick six. It was picked up by number 94, Anson, out of BYU for Detroit. It was a pass that Sanchez really shouldn't have thrown. He could have threw it away. He was under pressure, tried to push the issue, try to make a play, and he was picked off there, and it resulted in 6 points. The Jets really need to do some work on offense. I mean, you look at the running back situation. Joe McKnight, he's out with an injury, a head injury. They're not classifying it as a concussion. They have a lot of depth issues there. Ivory is out with the hamstring injuries. Hopefully he'll play. We'll get to see him in the Jacksonville game coming up next week. I don't see them pushing him too hard just by the depth of the issues they have at running back. D. Milliner wasn't too bad. Pretty broke up a pass there in the end zone. Not too bad. The number one overall pick number 9 out of Alabama, did pretty well. The Jets, with this schedule that they have coming up, they're going to have to get it together. They're going to be in a lot of trouble. Geno Smith, not too bad. He hurt himself there in the third quarter, trying to make a scramble under pressure, which really should have thrown to the open running back there, Span. I don't think he saw him. He tried to run over to the left side of the field, twerked his right ankle. Doesn't seem to be major, so he practiced today up in training camp. So we should see him. He should be back on the field and in the game next week. So Jets are just being Jets. They had problems there. Sanchez, he was 5-for-8 with 49 yards through the first two drives. He redeemed himself with a nice middle-of-the-field pass to tight end Jeff Cumberland. 7 plays, 80 yards, 4 minutes, 26-yard touchdown pass to Jeff Cumberland. So he did bounce back. like you said, when he was interviewed on the sidelines, that he couldn't let that pick six. He had to put it behind him and keep moving. So I think Sanchez has the right idea, the right focus on what to do. It's just a matter of executing. Geno Smith, he looks pretty well. I mean, he is a rookie. He favored Clyde Gates on his first set of moving the ball. So we shall see as we move on. But I tell you, Mark Sanchez, and I'm saying it here on Sports in Depth, he will be the opening day quarterback, and it's just a matter of how long can he carry it, bring down the mistakes. The Jets did have a lot of penalties by the second half of the third quarter, 10 minutes left in the third quarter. They were already up to 9 penalties, so they have to watch that.
The penalties is, I mean, it's the first preseason game, so I mean you can kind of expect that. But then again, that's an inordinate amount of penalties. Now, where does the blame go? In fact, you know, hold on just a second. Let's bring everybody into the Sports in Depth Nation by the man who coined the phrase Sports in Depth Nation, Mel Cosell Smith Jr. Rooney, bring the people in.
Good doctor, the Sports in Depth Nation is here. The Sports in Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God, the radio network, and the straw that turns the drink is here, and that is the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, Doc.
Thank you, Rooney. And with that, we will take you into, once again, Sports in Depth, brought to you by Sal the Brazza Restaurant and Bella Fortaleza, Luis Souza's by George, and best number 3-star hotel in all of Brazil, Justino's iconic Chabanjada in Bella Fortaleza, and also TCJ Productions, international promoter, Pedro Cotamacio Jr., who is happens to be in town, and that's where we also happen to shoot our shows when we're in Fortaleza. That's another one to the outside of Chabajada. Also, take our hats off to Shapito's. Late at night, you want to get it right. That's where you call to get that late night snack, sandwiches, desserts, or just the burger. Shapito's. And also, I want to take your hat off to one of the top five, number 5-star hotels in all of Brazil. That's Pedro Park. But now, let's get back into Sports in Depth. Let's get back to Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a.k.a. Little Coco, a.k.a. Rooney, and Cincinnati Searings, a.k.a. Mr. NFL 411, as we bring you back into Sports in Depth. What's you? On Blog Talk Radio, on the Trusted God Radio Network.
And Doc, don't forget,
there's nothing to forget. We're back at you. What should we not forget?
Don't forget that not only am I Mr. 411, but I'm also Mel Cosell's tag team partner.
Oh, no, listen, I already got your names, baby. The cape and the mask.
Not bad at all.
Hey,
not
Steve,
bad.
Are we working under the hood tonight, or are we going maskless tonight?
Listen, it's late at night. You can go maskless, baby. But hey, well, when the sun comes up, you got to play the vampire role. Throw the mask back on. You know what I mean?
I was telling Doc once that working under a hood, man, is the most uncomfortable thing a guy can do. Nobody ever thinks of that. But in the wrestling business, it's hot, the damn thing moves all the damn time. What a pain.
Well,
yeah,
you talked about the first guy to do the match. Let's get back to a little football here, because I know you guys are going to take me slam mammy on the mat with the WF. Nine penalties.
I heard Caesar say that Sanchez, he's going to predict he's going to be the opening day starter. He's most likely right, and I say heaven for said, Sanchez again. He's going to be a tough. He's going to be a really tough sell to the Jet fans. He really is. First interception he throws, they're going to blow him off the building.
Well, I mean, getting back to, I mean, they threw one in the preseason game yesterday. I don't know how much that was his fault or the defense doing a good job. He threw one in practice, they booed. But you talked about the 9 penalties. Now, what do we attribute that to? We attribute that to their rusty, attribute that to it's the first preseason game. We attribute that to people are trying to press. You know, that's an ordinary amount of penalties. Thank goodness it happens in a preseason game, and why you think is they have the penalties, they win the game. But you know, what do we attribute 9 penalties to?
I mean, you look at it as the game went on and he started bringing in the rookies. You had 2 penalties by Bushi, number 75, Dacos. You had another offside penalty. So it's a combination of the off-season rust. You having the rookies because, you know, this is really the crucial part of really where they really start to cut players. They have to get them down to, I think it's 75 by the 27th, and by the 31st, they have to be down to their 53-man roster. So, you know, I mean, really, this is really not preseason. It's starting to be cut season. So guys are trying to make an impression on the coaches and ownership, try to make the team there. But these are things that the Jets have to watch. I mean, when you look at the Giants, without their game against Pittsburgh, basically they were flawless in the penalties, you know, not committing the penalties. And Tom Coughlin was talking about management, team management, everyone playing on the same page, watching the penalties, different things like that, and it paid off yesterday. In their game against Pittsburgh, in Pittsburgh, which, you know, pretty hard team to play against. I mean, their defense is still pretty well. They held the Giants to, you know, to 15 points. You know, so, I mean, Big Blue, even with a wide receiver such as Victor Cruz, who he scored a 57-yard reception from Eli Manning, like they never lost a step. Even though he missed a lot of the training due to his contract
issues. If you go back there on retrospect, he really didn't miss a lot of training, just that the whole situation of what was going on with the contract really got in the papers early. And it's not the ongoing shenanigans of that has been documented for a long time, but he really didn't miss a whole lot of the
for the OTAs and everything like that, you know, that plays a role.
Really, I mean, so looking at the importance of those, you earn the money as always. You know, you said you were kind of taken back and given some kudos to the fact that with that happening, and you're right. I mean, it seems so apropos that the first touchdown scored by them was a Manning to Cruz, and he gave us a little self. So the thing I'm looking at too, you talked about Pittsburgh. And, you know, is their coach on the hot seat to a certain degree? I mean, you're looking at him, and then like a lot of it has to be attributed to Roethlisberger, who, for my money, you know, seriously one of our Roethlisberger, and they say a lot of things. He's a prime-time, big-time quarterback. I mean, he's the guy that's won a Super Bowl with the worst stats by a starting quarterback, but he is a prime-time quarterback. He seemed to be a leader. But, you know, he when it has to get done, he gets it done. And a lot has been made about his size, how big he is. Well, it's not how the size, how big he is, I think his talent is. He's one of the premier quarterbacks in the league. You know, you talk about Brady, you talk about Manning. But this guy is prime time. The question is, and you have to take his hat off to the coach in this situation, because he hasn't had him all year round. So questions that I'm posing at you, there's no question. If he was healthy, the Steelers can go a long way. If he's not, is the coach not on this type of hot seat that we've got the guy here in? But there's got to be some questions about his stability.
I mean, like the ownership, the family likes him. I don't think Tomlin is that much on a that much of a hot seat. Obviously, when you play in the National Football League, you are in the spotlight. It's all about winning Super Bowls. But he does a tremendous job in management. He has the respect of his players and definitely ownership that they like. I mean, he is a winning coach. I mean, you know, they haven't been to the big game, you know, for a couple of years. But just to see the leadership that Tomlin has, I think at this point, obviously, it's always more. You want them to do more and win more games and bring home that Lombardi Trophy. But I think he's pretty safe, at least through this season. You should see.
Good, he's well liked. He's a winning coach, defending tradition. It's good to see that. It's good to see some situations where loyalty, seniority, what you have done is appreciated, and the residue of that is a positive one and allows in situations like this, you know, here's a coach who can coach without looking over his shoulder. And speaking of coaches looking over his shoulder, there was some talk, I know you're on top of it, a lot of negativity from Wes Welker about playing under Belichick. He said some things that, you know, you kind of be surprised. He was the primetime receiver, and Moss left. Belichick did put him in the lineup, but there was some, is this the residue of the bitterness of the Patriots not keeping him?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, but a veteran like Wes Welker should be used to this business. I mean, everyone's expendable from the GM on down, basically. I mean, the only one that's safe is the owner because they own the team. So everyone is expendable in this league, and it's a sport that's very unique in the way that it's set up for the contracts and different things like that. A lot of it's not guaranteed as opposed to baseball and basketball and, you know, different sports like that. Very unique sport, very brutal sport. You know, they're looking to change a lot of the rules this year as far as celebrating and different things like that, not spinning the ball,
you know, Cincinnati C and Memphis. Yeah, I mean, I think that's ludicrous. I mean, what does that have to do with anything? I mean, if the guy wants to celebrate, I mean, some guys rarely get into the end zone. I mean, you know, spinning the ball, you know, it's, you know, let the guys play the game. Some things sort of asinine. I've never understood a guy jumping up and down, making a sack the first 45 seconds of a football game. But you know what? He made the sack. The guy scored the touchdown. I don't see what all the big problem is.
Well, if I can just kind of piggyback on, my thing is, what's the reason, Doc? I mean, you know, if a guy wants to come in and, you know, if the guy scores a touchdown and, you know, he wants to come in and spike the ball or, you know, throw it between the goalposts like a slam dunk, that's fine, but no prolonged 5-minute celebration. You know, I thought you've been there before, you know?
Oh, well,
agree with them, with Mel. I mean, when you start to use, you know, the props, which the ball technically would be considered a prop, but when you see guys like utilizing the touchdown goalpost, they picking it up and they using the, they like it's in golf and they're hitting the ball. I mean, that's just go way over line. I mean, you got to play game.
I don't see the problem with it. I mean, especially if a guy's going to score 4 touchdowns a year. I mean, if you know, it's like a pitcher in baseball. Would you upset about the home run? You threw the pitch. You threw the pitch. I mean,
reason, Doc. What's the reason?
I'm saying too. With the reason, I mean, don't give me a don't give me a 5-minute jammy. You know, but let's talk about something, and we'll be right back, gentlemen. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. Something that was not within reason, but then again, it shows the reason why things, in a lot of ways, as often that things change, they remain the same. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. It's a Sunday Sports Wrap. Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a.k.a. Little Coco, a.k.a. Rooney, is here, and Maddie Stevens, a.k.a. the 411. Together they are the Mass and the King. This is WWF right here on SID's campaign. Forget Roddy Piper. Forget the Hulk. I got the team that can crush them both. Rock, they'll rock the spot. Rock family, what's the devil? The Sons of God Network. Gentlemen, we want to get into something that is set. The opening pitches and monologue of pitches. Jackie Robinson, pre-release statue. Next one is Jackie Robinson. Show DJ, Derek Jeter, and Alex Rodriguez. Show Tiger Woods. And he's open to Cruz. But the one I want to focus on first, as you know, Jackie Robinson first came from baseball, he played first base. There was a time in Cincinnati, the crowd was getting so outrageously racist and vulgar to Jackie that Drew Reese came over the shortstop side, put his arm around Jackie, and a gesture that said, hey, hey, Jackie, I'm with you, this is my teammate, you all can cut the crap. That statue is in front of the Mets minor league ball team Cyclones, and it was revealed this week that somebody faced the statue, wrote the word nigger, and put a swastika on there. It reminded me when I heard that what Willie O'Ree told me, the first African American to play in the NHL. And he was playing a game in Maryland, and somebody blew a black cat out on the ice. And he said, you know, I thought we had gotten away from this, and I think this is the evidence that we will never get away from this kind of mindset of people. I mean, we just got over the incident with the football player, and I just thought that was so hypocritical, and you're testing the intellect of African-American. The guy went away for, what, 3-4 days, and now he's come back. He's healed. But he's 37 years old. He's healed. I mean, if that's the case, then we could heal the world, that everybody take classes for 3-4 days. My goodness. And just to let us know that things haven't changed, this happens. This happens. Nigger on the statue. Dedicated to Jackie Robinson and Pee Wee Reese, the great Yankee shortstop, and a swastika. And, you know, Rooney, I'm going to let you run with it. Your thoughts on that?
Well, not to say about it, Doc. I mean, it speaks for itself. Like you said, the more things change, the more they say the same. I don't know what everybody's so shocked and baffled about with this guy who used the N-word. I mean, what, do you think baseball had the only John Rocker? I mean, what's to talk about? I mean, he just said what a lot of them were thinking. And were bright enough not to say in public. That's all. Well, basically, baseball is the only one who had a John Rocker type there. I mean, you had a bunch of guys that used to play for the San Diego Padres who were birchers. I mean, you know, what's the difference? What was it? Eric Schauen, they were birchers. Eric Schauen, those guys were birchers. Belonged to the John Birch's body. So what's the difference?
You know, it just... Your response to this says, what's changed? Who's shocked? This is how they work. And like, okay, so what? You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, the statue, 2013, Jackie Robinson came into baseball back in 1947. And then it lets you take a look back into baseball. Where are the African-Americans? Managers, where are the African American batting coaches? Where are the African American coaches? Where are the
African American
coaches?
Talk about what kind of jobs they have. That's like I'm playing baseball, period. I mean, all those guys who are any people of color are basically Latino ball players. You don't even have American blacks playing baseball to begin with. Let's talk about where the batting coaches are, where is this, and they're not even playing baseball.
That's silly. Sports in Depth, Block Talk Radio on the Southern Network. We're reacting to the incident that happened here last week in Brooklyn. For those of you updates, Yankees won today 5-4, a home run, Gardner, in the bottom of the ninth. Alex Rodriguez and Alfonso Soriano both went deep. The winner of the PGA, Jason Duffner, and this is the fourth time in the last 5 years that the winner of the PGA has won their very first ever major tournament. Tiger Woods, a plus four over, and now it's 6 years that the great one has not won a major. He will still be the number one player in the world, and he'll probably be the player of the year, as Phil Mickelson and his team would have had a shot. But Mickelson, after coming back and winning the British Open, him and Tiger just have a lot of problems today. I think Tiger was 4 over, Nicholson was 10 over, and the major quest for Tiger any rest of the year is over. The last major of the year, won by Jason Duffner. Some other things to talk about: the Yankees won, the Jets lost their preseason opener, the Giants won their preseason opener, and baseball today, the Orioles beat the Giants 10-2. They scored 10 runs after the fifth inning. DeJones, another home run, his 24th. He's some ball player, some kind of ball player. And Kane, 7 innings pitched, 5 hits, 3 earned runs, and he was the loser. Pirates, playing so well, lost today, 3-2 against the Rockies. They won 70 games now, the most they won in the last few years they've been playing baseball. Look at an article, reading a story about Willie Rogers, Willie Stargell. He talked about how Roberto Clemente brought a winning attitude. And showed it. I remember he said he showed me how to win. Mets won again today, too, 9-5. They're rocking and rolling. That has to be said about Collins and the good job he's doing, how well they're playing. And they are playing some really good baseball. They win again today. The Mariners beat the Brewers 2-0. And that was a shutout. Hernandez, 8 innings pitch, 4 hits, no earned runs, no base on balls, and 9 strikeouts. Smoke. His 13th home run of the year, and that one's Jal Hernandez. 8 innings, 4 hits, no earned run. The Phillies and the Nationals hooked up today. Phillies come up on the short side. This is a good baseball team that's kind of went south, really. They lost 6-0 to the Nationals, and you got to wonder how long their manager's going to keep his job over there. But one of the elite teams in baseball, no longer one of the elite teams in baseball. The Dodgers, Don Mattingly. Dodgers baseball, 8-2 winners today. Mattingly, with Willie Mays, the first baseman. And it's good to see his team back on the winning record. There was so much talk early in the year when they weren't winning and maybe Donnie would be gone pretty soon. Well, that talk has disappeared, and the Dodgers are 8-2 winners today. And Donnie, baseball is going quite well right now. Some other scores for you. We'll get back to you later on. And football. The Buffalo Bills, preseason, 44-20 winners over the Colts. No more Peyton Manning. These are all preseason football games. A lot of football, too. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for the football fans. And Luck was 4-6 today, 51 yards. He didn't play a lot. Wayne had 5 yards in receptions. It's preseason, and Jets quarterback Geno Smith fully participated in practice Sunday after suffering a mild ankle sprain in Friday's preseason game. So, what you tell us is that they see that he's all right and he'll be able to play against them. I'm pretty sure he wants to play against the Giants coming week too, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's going to be the marquee game to decide who the starting quarterback is going to be. And I still say it, barring any injury, that Mark Sanchez will be the starting quarterback against the Bucs.
At least. The first time he turns the ball over at home, see, it throws an interception, I still say the Jets fans will boo him out of the stadium.
Well, they may do that when he runs on the center the first time he comes on the field. I mean, it's going to be interesting.
You cannot tell the Jets fans, Doc, you just cannot tell the fans Mark Sanchez again this year. I'm sorry. Yeah, he can be the starting quarterback, as he says, and that's probably going to be the case. But I got to tell you, the Jets fans, in all honesty, are sick of Mark Sanchez. Like, they see what he is. They know what he is. They know what he's not. They don't want Mark Sanchez behind him. They'd rather go with Geno Smith. And at least they will lay. At least he's young, okay? He's going to have growing pains. A this guy, Sanchez, guys make the same mistake he did in year one as a rookie. He's still making the same mistake. I mean, at least let's see some new blood and let the kid grow. You know, he's going to have growing pains, but you don't see the guy 4 or 5 years later is going to still make the same rookie mistake he made years ago.
You know, but the question is, with Geno Smith, as the fans out there, do you want Geno Smith because he's a better quarterback, or you want Geno Smith because he's Geno Smith?
Well,
I mean, look at him in West Virginia. When he played teams of substance, he lost. I think it was five in a row.
I think at this point, see, Jet fans want change just for the sake of change. That may not be a great reason, but at this point, they want change just for the sake of change.
Well, sometimes that's not always the best, and like I still see Mark is he's starting to mature a lot. I mean, you look at the last two seasons when they were on a downslide there, he lost a lot of weapons and he had a lot of confidence issues. That drive, what he threw to Jeff Cumberland, that looked like the old Mark Sanchez of his first two seasons. And I'm starting to see that. I'm starting to see that and how he bounced back. So, you know, we look at the bad, which we have been the last two seasons, but I see something different. I see something different in Mark. Yes, he threw the pick six and almost threw a second one, but he seems to be getting back in there in center and saying, look, okay, we're going to get passes. Let's go to the next play. And that's what he lacked the last two seasons.
Well, he bounced back well after the first, you know, his opening interception. That's true. He did bounce back relatively well during the course of the game. But I don't think he's going to make it here, see? Not only because of his lack of overall talent and leadership, but obviously he has no weapons. They slowly but surely took every offensive weapon that the kid had to throw to away. I just think they need a fresh start somewhere. Send him out to the West Coast or something. Give him up for a bag of balls or something. Send him out to the West Coast. He needs a fresh start, a new team, a new crowd, a new everything. Send him out to the West Coast for like a bag of donuts or something. Get whatever you can. See who will take him. And send him. He needs a fresh start. See, he's not going to do it here. He's a little nervous to begin with. He has happy feet. Send him to the West Coast. Get a bag of donuts or something and hope for the best.
Well, I think that's what he's playing for.
The game here, too, is it's the Giants or the home team. So it's going to be interesting to see the reaction that the Giant fans give him, because this is not going to be a Jet home game. So this opportunity for Giant fans to come and see a game, an opportunity for people who are not season ticket holders to catch a game. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the fans, and we're talking about the neutral fans and the non-Jet fans, how they will react to he can take it down low. Back down. Jump over you and then clamp down the seat so you don't storm me. Ladies and gentlemen, the booster apart is in the field down. And booster, glad you had
Hey,
you
hey, day. Y'all. What's up, y'all? Hey.
Now, the
welcome,
you know,
my word.
I hear something.
But, well, I tell you what, I'm pretty sure Hoops, you hear something, but you didn't like too much yesterday. Steelers lost to the Giants.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, but I'll tell the Sea Wings that they need work on special teams and the line. That's what they need work on. Well, than that, the defense was good. It was strong. Defense was good. They stopped the Giants from getting in the end zone. Other than that, that's all they need work on.
Like I said earlier in the show, the defense is still solid. I mean, they're known for their defense. Defense is still solid. The offensive line, some pressure on Roethlisberger and the backup quarterback. Gatsky, Gaskowski or something like that. They got
from
a free agency from Cincinnati. But I don't think they're just gonna roll over and play dead. It is preseason. They really didn't push Roethlisberger too much. They want to keep him healthy. The Giants played pretty good. Andre Brown, he fumbled the ball there. Really caught the ire of Tom Coughlin.
He was pissed off on him.
I think they'll do pretty good this year.
Thank you.
The way that Jerry Reese, I mean, he was very forceful in saying that, you know, they haven't been to the Super Bowl lately, haven't been to the postseason, and, you know, it's unacceptable. So, I mean, with the Super Bowl being played here in the New York metro area, New York City metro area, MetLife, what better than to have a New York team play in the Super Bowl, cold weather stadium at home? That's history all around. So, and you really look at it, too, and I was talking to Hoopster about that week, Super Bowl week around that time. New York City is going to be, besides the Super Bowl, you got the hockey. The Rangers are playing up in Yankee Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think the Knicks are playing Miami that week, right?
Yes, correct.
And the Nets, I think, are playing Chicago, so... This is going to be a hub of a lot of sports.
Well, New York's going to be making money. You don't believe that? They ain't going to be.
Well, you know, the thing that still gets me here with this whole thing is that Super Bowl. And I remember the column written by a late great sports writer, not very popular, but Vic Young. And Vic Young, after watching the Green Bay Packers versus the Cleveland Browns in Green Bay on the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. And you have a column that says, hey, you know what? How come runner-up and they second the place team in both divisions would play a runner-up game bowl in Miami? I remember the Packers and the Browns one year, they were down there, and he said, whoa, 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 whoa. How come the second place teams are playing in good weather, a neutral site, where the players can perform at their best, and the championship game is played on a frozen field. He said, you know, it's time to take the championship game and put it in warm weather and neutral site. In those days, the hometown fans really, you know, weren't all that concerned about if they didn't see the game last, especially in Green Bay, where you're going to be sitting in a blanket all day long anyway, be fed up at home. And that's what the Super Bowl was about. A neutral site, unless you happen to be playing it at your field, that's the case could happen now. But it was, more importantly, it was letting the players perform on the field that allowed the best performances to happen. And you got to look at the possibility of it not being the case here. I mean, suppose you get a snowstorm. I just, you know, it's just the whole idea. You put the second call for the wife, and she's still taking the bus. You know what I mean? You said you were, you know, you're going to quit drinking, so you're not drinking wine, but you're drinking, instead of a bottle of wine, you're drinking 8 packs of beer a day. I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, the logical thing
would
have been...
Well, Doc, I predicted on your show here, many moons ago, if you recall, that within the next, I'd say, 20 years, all new stadiums that'll be, there'll be retractable rules on all dumb stadia, within the next 20 years. And that way you can play in the optimum conditions.
Rudy, and you got to question why that wasn't done, because now everything is perfect. It's New York City. You know the field is going to be in good shape. Now it's cold weather, but now you've enhanced the situation. Now it's a cold weather area, but you can see the game played on a field that's not going to be dictated as far as the play of the conditions. And, I mean, you look at me and Harry Perez talk about this today. Who are you kidding about? It's going to cost you so much extra money to put a dome on that stadium. And now you're going
to
turn around.
They didn't
want
to pay the extra $500,000 was the bottom line, Doc. They didn't want to kick up the extra $500,000 for it. Another $750,000, and they could have had the retractable dome. They didn't want to kick out the cash. As simple as that.
But you may see that.
you may see that in Major League Baseball too. If you look over the first, I would say, month or so of baseball games or the regular season, a lot of stadiums like in Minnesota and different things like that, they were snowed out in April. Snowed out.
Yep.
So, I mean, you probably see it probably in the next 20, 25 years, God willing, we're here. You'll probably see a lot more new stadiums being built with that, just so you don't have all these makeup games all over the place. You have some teams flying across all over the country.
It was just funny, you know, when Minnesota built their new stadium, now this was one of the coldest cold weather places in the world, and they built the dome. And you know, and you gotta question what was the mindset, the psyche, or the intellect of the people who put this part. And you tell everyone for like less than $1 million, you could have put a dome on this thing.
I believe they said the cost, like whatever round, if they'd have done this on the Giant Jet Stadium, I believe they said somewhere between $500,000 and $750,000, somewhere between $500,000 and $750,000 or so.
Sad and
to build the retractable. To have the retractable roof, so that way, you know, you can open it on beautiful sunny days and close it when it's super cold and super rainy or whatever. They could have done
one time they had that field, Cincinnati, see, where there was an opening in the roof. I believe the majority of the field was covered, but there was a little area where, you know, snow or rain could get in. But you just have to question what was the whole mindset of putting this together in New York City, you know, and a place where, if you look at it, everything said we need dome. You got two teams playing here. You got two teams playing here. It's New York City. It just really didn't make a lot of sense. As a lot of things don't make a lot of sense. You know, so, you know, some quotations.
Well, since 20 years, like I said, Doc, I'm thinking, maybe C said 25 years, but I say within the 20, 25 years, all stadia will be, but with a retractable dome, it will be a multi-purpose stadium.
That's the case. They should be, but you're going to have the so-called purists. I remember Bud Grant, his coach of the Minnesota Vikings, and you got to question his psyche, too. He didn't allow the players to have gloves or hand warmers. I mean, you know, what was that all about? You know, sometimes, you know, this is the mindsets and the traditions of the game. You know, I remember me and the next to last pitcher to win 300 games, and as it turned out, the next to last left-hand pitcher to win 300 games. And we were talking about, I had read where he had said that he didn't go along that theory of, and it's been so asinine, where when he hits a home run, up comes C-Wings, and I throw at him. And he said, you know, he just never got into that. He said, you know, now when I strike the batter out, what is it? You throw the bat at me? It's just, you know, the book, and you got to wonder who wrote the book. There's got to be an idiot that wrote some of these books. So that whole idea of throwing at a batter who didn't even hit the ball, and last I remembered, that was the whole idea they had to play that bat, they were looking to hit the ball. And, you know, you may have some proofs to say, well, you know, the game should be played in the elements and all that kind of stuff. And you look back to the history right now, you just had to show you how great Jim Brown was to constantly play in that kind of weather. I mean, he played in Cleveland. I mean, he played half of his games every year in Cleveland.
Cold.
And you got to look at, in those days, he wound up playing Detroit. He wound up playing Minnesota. I mean, he was not in the division where they played each other back to back, but I mean, you just look at it just hit me. I mean, like it hit me about the fact that Ali beat every great part of his era past his prime. Yeah, look at how great Jim Brown was, and those elements to put up those kind of numbers. You know what I mean? And it's just wow, it's just really amazing, and it's just you're amazing by people who go by the book, and they can't tell you who wrote the book. You know, it's like, you know, especially, you know, there's so many Christians who don't do Christian-like things. I mean, they don't even know what it says in the Bible. They'll give you a quotation, but have they read the Bible? Do they know about, besides Daniel and the lion's den, and the wise God punish the children of Israel who wanted a king. You know, he said, in my anger, I gave you a king, and in my wrath, took it away. But
and this is especially for Hoop. I see the Mel Smith Jr. crystal ball sees a new boxing king coming down the line.
You talked about the Steelers, and you said some things there. You know, people don't know you. Let's talk about something that really bothered me today. I'm in Columbus Circle, and I'm going along Central Park, and it's can't walk in there and I think about Leroy Neiman. I'm making miles, and as I'm crossing the street, I see the crowd there, but as I get closer, there's no more Mickey Mouse. I wasn't aware of it. I'm pretty sure Lifeguard said some Cincinnati Seawards, and I called Hoopster right away, but there's no more Mickey Mouse. And that was just, really amazing. That was one of the landmark spots. And Bill Lederman was a guy that loved Lifeguard and liked us. I think here's the situation, what happened. A divorce came up, and the wife wound up with the place, and it's mismanagement. I mean, you told me we were 4 months behind in the rent. I mean, how Harold Weston talked about it, that's the problem with our system here. You get married, and she winds up with half, and she didn't have enough sense to realize that she couldn't run the place. And, it had been a lot more beneficial to have Lederman running it, and you've known where your financial support comes from. Like these ladies in Finney, if they don't get child support money, they want to get lock the guy up. You miss a support payment or not, but if you lock him up, if you miss one payment, guess what? You're going to miss all the payments because nobody's going to be able to send it in. It was sad and touching, as Harold Weston would say, and a point well taken when you salute a place. I mean, no more Mickey Mouse. I mean, Larry Hardesty had that show down there. I mean, can you talk a little bit about Mickey Mouse and what it was like for you?
What it was like, man, that was like an iconic place, like a historical place. It had some great memories in there. It had the likes of Don King, Bert Sugar, everybody in there. The Liberty, Larry, what is for Larry? Nobody would know the Liberty.
Larry Hardesty groomed the WNBA. And I remember a couple years after it was a problem, a lot of people worked with him, couldn't get credentials. It was not only the people who he brought in there, but the people who would come there and the people who were there. I think of the guy from the show, I can't think of his name now. He was
Michael
Wilburn.
You had William Malden. Yeah, a lot of people up in there.
Yeah, I'm just talking about
all big stars. All called the Larry.
I can't think of his name. That guy had that show. People would come on and make their complaints about and stuff like that. It was there at Mickey Mantle's that really the IBF would announce who won their sports reporter, sportscaster year. What I remember, Bob Lee Jr. was there. I mean, the place was packed. It reminded me so much, Rooney, of a fight at the Garden of the Felt Farm. You know what I mean? People would, it's a fight there. Hey, man, I'm going down to the Felt Farm. And you see Ray Leonard. I mean, you just drop by. Yeah, somebody's going to be there. So you would drop by. You didn't know who was going to be there, but somebody's going to be. Besides you, who you knew was going to be, Chris Chandler, his lovely wife came out, Audria, Don King, like you said, Leroy Neiman with Marion Boykin. And I remember Bob Lee Jr. was there, and because everybody knew on a Thursday and Friday, Thursday, Mickey Mantle's. I mean, that's the place to be. Live Hard to See Sports Box, Mickey Mantle's. And I remember
stay open
Bob
late,
Lee,
too.
I said, Bob, who won your Sportscast of the Year Award? And then he says, Doc, I don't know. I said, hold on, Doc, you know what? Let me call my dad. And this is the process of just being down. Larry always had me helping out. And he says to me, Doc, you won the award. And all would have it, and all great and wonderful things come from him, which I always think of everything. You know, it was announced live on Larry Harris' show that at Mickey Mantle's. I mean, can you double
yep.
that? I mean, that's you know, you can't beat that. It's a home run with no bases loaded, winning lottery tax free. It was a Larry show at Mickey Mantle's that announced that I was the 1998 IBF Sportscaster of the Year winner. And
that
I
place went berserk. That place went berserk. Oh, they were screaming Doc's name out there. I thought I had to get Doc out of there. I mean, what? I said, Doc, you want me to get you out of there? He said, no, Hoops, it's okay.
I said, Hoop, can you wait to have the dessert? And, and it was prestigious. It was the first time I've ever been honored by an African American organization, prestigious organization. And also, you know, Larry had won it back to back, and then Marion had won it. And for me to come behind guys of that class and character, you're talking about Marion Boyd, greatest boxing mind of his generation, the greatest boxing show in the history of mankind, Larry Hardesty, greatest African American sports in the history of radio in New York City, one of my mind, one of only four guys of his stature from our culture as African Americans have reaching out to help other brothers, Dr. Frank Bannister, Larry Hardesty, Marion Boykin, and also late as Frank Weiser was Hal Jackson. I mean, those guys were always looking to help somebody. They opened the doors for so many people. And like I said, I just can't tell you the glee and pride that I had of winning that award. And I remember going down to, it was in Florida that year, and it showed you kind of an organization they were, too. I remember Bernard Hopkins came over and ate at my table with me, two or three of the referees that were down there and who later sent me things and put into the Dressing Guard Sports and Entertainment Artifacts. I came back and I was talking to my nephew Charles about, God, I said, hey, you know, there's no more Mickey Mantles. And then what happened? Howard Wilson Jr. sent me an article that the legendary Fifth Street Gym, okay, that Angelo Dundee, his brother, and Ollie made famous, was robbed, and Ollie's collection was stolen out of there. And Howard Wilson said, you know, right up front, says that that definitely had to be a definitely inside job. And I told my nephew that, you know, it had been stolen. All these stuff has been stolen. He said, well, that just enhanced the value of your stuff in your collection. And, you look at this, and Harold said, you know, you got to look at this because how did this happen? We're talking Angelo Dundee's gym, his brother's famous gym, Ali's spot. You know, this is a situation that Harold said that it's more than meets the eye. You know, it can't be back payment and money. You know, there's something here that's beyond what we know. But Harold Wilson Jr., first African-American matchmaker, history matchmaker, the Fifth Street Gym in Miami, the legendary Fifth Street Gym, was vandalized, and the Muhammad Ali memorabilia in its entirety was stolen out of there. So we'll keep you posted. What's your ongoing
situation? Oh, okay. It's got a video on them. Don't worry.
That's where Ollie met Dundee, and then, like I say, the rest of his history. Actually, the Sports in the Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Government Network. Once again, the latest sports update.
Hey, Doc.
When?
You know, Mantle's got a restaurant in Oklahoma, too, you know. He got a steakhouse in Oklahoma. That's still going.
Really?
Yes, he does. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know Mick.
Yeah, he got a steakhouse up there in Oklahoma where he was born and raised at.
Hmm. Yeah,
wow.
I had always wondered why. And it was said, Mickey Mantle said that his favorite player was Joe DiMaggio. I said, well, that's kind of funny. Guy from Oklahoma, favorite player is Joe DiMaggio. And I read somewhere Mickey Mantle said that, no, the Yankees told him to say that for publicity watches because his favorite player was Stanley Frank Musial, number six, seven-time batting champion.
Could say that because they were
batting champion.
Enemies.
Three first National League player to win three MVP awards, and well, the rest is history. Yeah. Gentlemen, we look at some other issues here, and we're talking about and Hoops, so you know, I wanted to get you back in on this, your Brownsville guy, and everybody's reaction to the Jackie Robinson Pee Wee Reese statue that had the words nigger and a swastika. And I mean, I know the people in Brooklyn are in a very serious uproar over that.
Yeah, you ain't lying. They already put up award money already. I heard the Daily News put up some money. A lot of people, especially over there, pissed off. Yeah, that was uproar. Mrs. Robinson, she was the uproar. That goes to show you, still racist in this country. It's never going to get better, man. Never. They're always going to be the same. Like Don King always say, always in America. Only in America. Never change, man. Never. That was an uproar. That was, with Pee Wee Reese there hugging him, too. It's not Jackie Robinson by himself. It's Pee Wee Reese there, too, on the statue. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I talked about how that whole thing started.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. Yeah. They're going to get caught. Believe me, they're going to get them. You can believe that. Trust me. They're not going to let that fly. Mm-mm. The whole people out there, the whole people who go to the ball games, everybody. They were giving out free newspapers, too, every day out there. You notice that. Daily News get our free newspapers over there at the games. So they want everybody to stop talking, see who did it. They already raised up the money already. I think one of the 50,000 Sea Wings, I think.
Yeah, the news is reporting, I think it's $50,000.
Yeah, I heard it went up. It's going to go up more. It's going to raise.
Well, trust me, whoever did that, somebody will give them up for 50 large. Somebody will give them up for that.
Don't worry. They're going to get someone's going to rap. You can believe that. They're going to get caught. And just make sure everybody's listening. You see something, say something. You know what I mean? Especially for Jackie Robinson. He shows that respect for the man. What he did for baseball. You know what I mean? And I mean that from my heart. You know what I mean? What he did for baseball, good for a lot of African Americans. That's right.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Got the maze, Frankie Robinsons. You know what I mean? Willie McCovey.
Yeah.
We
put in all the things today. Tag words, Jackie Robinson, Frank Robinson, first African-American manager of baseball, Willie Mays, first African-American to hit 50 or more home runs in a season, the youngest to ever do it, too. Derek Jeter, who still had to wonder when is he going to come back.
Roy Capriano.
Okay, the door is it's a constant reminder, and If you had fell asleep, it woke you back up. But as often things change, they remain the same. And it's just, in the words of Howard Weston, just sad and touching. And this kind of stuff. And, this is just a lot of ways a small incident among what are so many other things of other proportions in a civil rights type of situation. I mean, it's bad enough you're writing that on a statue, but I mean, what about, once again, people not allowed jobs and into areas and hospitals and can't live here or there, because of the, not the content of the character, but the complexion of your skin. Gentlemen, we keep talking about the Jets and the Giants. Jerry Reese has said that the Giants, they get on the ball, have many players, get in the playoffs. RG3, they haven't been playing him in the preseason, which is no question. The thing we got to look at, he had something very similar to the running back from Minnesota. Now, can we expect him to come back from his injury, and how similar Cincinnati Sea Wings is it close to that of the injury?
Adrian Peterson?
So
AP.
Yeah. Well,
it's definitely a I don't think it was as devastating as Adrian Peterson, and it's definitely two different positions. AP, I mean, running backs, you just see by the time these guys turn around 27, 28. They on a decline. I mean, the knees, the legs. You look at Curtis Martin. If he didn't, if it wasn't for his knees going like that at such an early age, you know, but 30 years old for a running back, it's equivalent to a 38-year-old player in a Major League Baseball. So, I mean, you see RG3. I look at the films, you know, where he's taking snaps and different things like that. You can still see he's not 100% on the knee. I think the team really realized Shanahan, the mistake they may have made, not only in playing him with that injury, but you could have ultimately ended his career.
Yeah.
I mean, he really helped put Washington back on the map and made him relevant in the NFC or in the NFL, period.
Fair.
At
yes,
one
he
point,
did.
I mean, you remember I was covering the Jet game when they went down and beat Washington. So a couple of years ago, Washington was like the Cleveland Browns of the NFL.
You know, what really hurts me about the RG3 injury is, as a student of the game and a fan and reporter, what really hurts me about the RG3 injury is, Doc and panel, is here you had a kid that had such extraordinary ability to run the ball and throw the ball and had such intensity. The guy was about to revolutionize the quarterback position. He really was, man. And the injury that's now going to, you know, limit him and what he can do and the cautiousness now that is they're going to try to make him more of a bit more of a pocket passer and, you know, not try to get every inch or have to make every first down. And it just saddens me that here's a kid that just drew his incredible running ability and being able to throw the ball on the dime at the same time was on the verge of revolutionizing the quarterback position.
Hey, see,
I mean, real quick, when you look at the type of quarterbacks that are coming out now, Russell Wilson, Kaepernick, RG3, Josh Johnson, and Cincinnati. I mean, that guy is fast. He can throw. But
who do you remind you of, C. Wings? Who do you remind you of?
Who? Cordell Stewart.
That's what I said. We were talking about that. Me and C. Wings were talking about that boy.
But
he's
faster
yeah.
than Cordell.
Yeah.
But I think with these type of quarterbacks, I mean, these guys are very athletic. They're quick. They could throw on a run and be very accurate. I think the problem with RG3 is that, you know, he was thrust in the spotlight, starting quarterback. I mean, you even look at Mark Sanchez, his first year. He was playing like he was still in college, had problems with the ball security, you know, playing more like the, college level.
And
right.
He had a bad knee, right?
I think, well, he got injured the first year with
right.
the knee, toward the knee. Mm-hmm. But I think that RG3 was trying. He was trying very hard and not running out of bounds. You know, let me get that extra yard. But you got these 240, 50, 280-pound guys who run in a 4.440, 4.4140. These guys are strong.
Yeah.
They're coming at you as a Mack truck. And I kind of foresaw that happening with them getting hurt. Because remember, before he injured his knee, he was out a game or so for taking that hit.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, he's not the smallest of guys either. But, I mean, when you got these defensive players, it's totally different than the NFL 35 years ago. Just
yeah.
the fact that the size and speed of these players now.
Was something else, yeah. But he's still going to play his game. I think he's still going to run. He's still going to be RG3. Nothing going to change. He's still going
to
do his thing.
They want him to be more mindful of the hits that he takes, try to stay in the pocket a little bit more. You know, all the things that they want him to do to try to, you know, protect himself and, not get every little hit.
I see what he said. You got to have a line. You have no line. You're going to get killed.
Look at Michael Vick.
Shanahan I kind of see him playing RG3. He had to go with his best. He couldn't let him out, but there was questions Cincinnati see of RG3 even playing at not 100% before he got hurt.
I mean, there was some doubt about that, but I don't think how true it was. I think after he took that first shot, he had, I think it was a concussion. But he bounced back. I mean, you could look at him even when he played against the Giants. The guy was phenomenal. Phenomenal. I mean, you even got guys like Geno Smith. I mean, these are the new age quarterbacks coming out of college now. These guys are runners. I think more or less Michael Vick is the modern day poster player for that. You would say you see him in Atlanta. I mean, you look at the damage in the hits that he took, being flipped over. I don't know of any quarterback in the last 10, 15 years that had the athletic ability such as Michael Vick when he first came out, and look at the hits that he was taking. The guy was more like a tight end.
Yeah.
Who could throw? You never saw Doug Flutie take hits like that on a concert. You never saw Warren Moon or Randall Cunningham, Brett Favre. Well, Brett Favre took a lot of hits, more or less toward the latter of his career.
When he had
a bounty on him.
With that and the fact
I think he was one of the toughest quarterbacks out there.
Though. Oh yeah, yeah.
It's a good question here. A lot of people think he's the best quarterback ever. Since I see.
Brett Favre, I remember watching him play. I used to tune just to watch him. I think he's going to go down as one of the greatest. I don't think he is the absolute greatest, in my opinion. I still think Peyton Manning is up there number one at this modern, the last 25 years. I mean, not only in his completion, but just watching this guy, there's another quarterback that you will see. Give him. I've seen Peyton Manning march 80 yards down with 50 seconds left on the clock and being tackled and make a 25-yard pass. I mean, the guy's phenomenal.
Well, I say Joe Montana. That's my pick.
You know, the thing with Joe and Rooney, I think this is what those who want to be distracted is that Joe had some great personnel around him, and Steve Young came in and won the same way. And I think a lot of people saying you don't want to take anything away from his talent, and you saw what happened when he got to Kansas City. But in a lot of ways, Rooney, the mindset was in San Francisco, it was a system.
Well, it was a combination of his talent and the system. I think they used to script the first, 10 or 15 starting plays for every game. The first 10 or 15 offensive plays were absolutely scripted, and the Walsh used to talk about that. But let me say this just quickly, okay, Doc? I don't really subscribe myself to the one greatest quarterback theory, okay? I mean, you might like a certain guy's style better than the others, but as far as I'm concerned, I don't really subscribe to the he was the greatest. To me, the top 5, 10, 15 guys that play that position were all great in their way and would be great in any era. So, you know, that's my thing about the so-called greatest or best quarterback. I don't think I myself can label one guy as the greatest. You know, the top 5, 10, 15 guys that would play that position were all great in their day, in their own way, and would be great in any era.
Like
look at Warren Moon. Look at that arm the guy had. Randall Cunningham. I mean, these guys are
Moon. Yeah, Moon. Moon played people.
Marino. Elway.
A lot of years.
We can keep going down the line, man.
Well, with Moon, you understand too. He was a guy that was really not allowed to play in the NFL for a while. I mean, you look at the Jackie Robinson situation. And the in Philly and the terminology where it's used. But, you know, sports has not always, in a lot of ways, they still haven't opened all the doorways to minorities. And this is the thing that the Jackie Robinson incident comes up on the heels of the thing with A-Rod. And I've said, you know, it was A-Rod situation. You know, A-Rod's not the only guy that in the steroid thing, but, you know, he seems to be the poster child. And just we move off that and we look at as often as things change, they remain the same. I mean, you know, there's volumes being said in that situation with that Jackie Robinson thing. At this time, too, everybody here at Sports in Depth, everybody, all the affiliates, the workers and personnel that put Sports in Depth together on the Trust and Guardian Network, we send out our deepest sympathy to Mike Bellamy, the sports director of BCAP Sports, and who brought to radio the greatest boxing show on radio, the Bellamy Boxing Report, which I got a chance to host and be a part of many times. Mike buried his beloved brother on Thursday, and we all here at Sports in Depth would like to send our condolences and sympathies, and he's surely in our prayers. Him, Mike Bellamy, his mother, and he lost his brother last week, and the services was Thursday. So we all here at Sports in Depth send our prayers and sympathy to Mike Bellamy, one of the great acts in sports and sports director of BCAP Sports. And he and company will be making a visit in the next couple of weeks to the Trust and Guide Sports and Depth Entertainment Artifacts Hall of Fame. They did a couple of pieces on us before, and he wants to come up and give us a little more pub. We're all thankful for that, and we're definitely really willing and ready and able, and we'll be able to talk a little more sports. If you give me just a minute or two, we'll let Hoopsa hang on with your little theme song. We'll be right back with more sports. Dr. Sports Park Radio on the Trust and Guide. Sports in Depth is brought to you by Lou Celsius, Solid Brother Restaurant, DCJ Productions, Tabajada, Lena Park, and Chipitos. And we also take this chance one more time during our birthday moves. We said happy anniversary to my niece and her husband Eddie on the 1st, 4th, President Obama, the 5th. On for the rest of the month. We'll have some other birthdays for you on the 10th. Turquoise Irving Brown and great George McGinnis. But at the end, we'll find how they dead. The late, great John Francis David Condon. In fact, they're all the Michael Joseph Jackson and Charlie Park. And with that, we will go back and get back to the crew. They're all here. Cincinnati Sea Wings, a.k.a. Mr. NFL 411, the Hoopster. And, of course, Mel Cosell Smith Jr. And with that, we are getting ready to go back and talk some more sports on Sports in Depth. Nothing sports rap. Sports in Depth on the Sports in Depth Network. We're back inside Sports in Depth. We're talking about the football, but since Cincinnati Sea Wings is here, as you know, the Yankees beat Detroit, won their series against him. Alex Rodriguez went deep. He hit a home run, first home run all year, first home run in a long, long time. Also, Rob Gardner hit the home run that won the game. And then we also had Alfonso Soriano hit a home run. And Mariano Rivera blew a save but got another win. He's 3-2 on the year. As you know, it is his last go-round, the greatest closer in the history of the game of baseball, and he will be. That apropos to a certain degree here talking about Jackie Robinson, will be the last player to wear number 42. And we talked about the situation. Charlie picked up the video. I was away in Brazil when the movie first came out, and so me and Charlie are going to sit down and watch it together. Gentlemen, we were talking about boxing. Got the Galen Barker this Saturday in Atlantic City. He's the IBF middleweight champion. We were talking Alvarez, or we've been talking Mayweather,
We've been talking Cotto. We've been talking Brandon Rios and Manny Pacquiao. And I think the question is, if Pacquiao doesn't win here, Rooney, if Pacquiao doesn't win impressively, if Pacquiao loses, he's done.
I think a bunch of these guys you just mentioned should retire anyway. I think Pacquiao should retire. I think Martinez should retire. I think about four or five or six of these guys you mentioned should retire anyway.
Doc,
we've had this discussion before.
We know your platform. You've got a cutoff age for him, but I think this is just cut and dry. Pacquiao has to come away, and not only does he come away with a win here, Rooney, he has to come away with an impressive win.
Hey, Doc, well, you said you know my platform, so it's not really all that for me to say about it. When a guy gets knocked out like that, plus he's up in age, and it's been in a bunch of wars, too,
I'd rather not have taken
this fight to begin with, quite frankly. He made a ton of money. He doesn't need it. There's nothing left to prove. And only bad things can happen as far as I'm concerned. I give Rios a big shot in this Rumble.
Yeah, Rios is good. That's going to be a tough fight. Yeah,
he's not seeing as much of this fight as he with Alvarez Mayweather.
No, he ain't seen nothing. His eyes are closed on this one.
Well, no, some kind of eyes are closed.
Eyes are closed on that one. We're wearing sunglasses on this one.
I want you guys to acknowledge that I was the first reporter of any type from any place to tell you straight up that this kid was going to be employed. And I want to acknowledge that I was the first. Thank you very much.
You know what?
If he turns out
to be right, I think we're going to have to set it up for the boss, Vince McMahon, to give him a job as a commentator.
And Rooney, if you get the job, it won't be an exhibition.
Hey, there's a club he could join. You know what the club that is?
What club is that?
The Kiss My Ass Club.
That was one of the most things that I kissed my ass. So I thought it was over there.
Listen, if God forbid, he gets knocked out in that fight, Mayweather,
they got to give you a steak. Oh, he'll get his props. But he ain't seen nothing yet. The fight ain't start yet, so.
Floyd. It's time. Nothing lasts forever.
Yeah, we know that.
I think that leads us to a very serious look. Have we seen the last of Derek Jeter? I mean, I've said this redundantly.
I believe
so.
Rooney,
it's preseason. He's going to play next preseason game. Then he's going to be ready for opening day. Then he'll be ready by the All-Star break. He still ain't ready. The great Derek
Jeter. He is done, Doc. Yeah. It's simple as that. He's been great. He's the first ballot Hall of Famer. Probably have a monument out in the Yankee Stadium. Jeter's done.
He's done as far as being a player, but I think he'll land somewhere in the Yankee organization.
Well, you know what?
We hope so.
Well, you know what? Hoops is on the money. I mean, because there's two things here. You know, I think it's the DH, but let's not forget the Yankees did not handle his contract negotiation like he was part of the family.
That's right.
Derek Jeter, the signing of Derek Jeter's contract with the Yankees should have took 5 minutes or less. Hey, Derek, how you feeling? How are these numbers? Put your numbers in and sign. That's how it should have been. This is the greatest shortstop in the history of the Yankees. One of the greatest shortstop in the history of the game. He wears number two, which is apropos. He's second
Doc,
to nobody.
You and I have had this conversation before, Doc.
Okay.
And I keep trying to tell you, and you keep fighting me on it, and I don't know why, that everything in pro sports these days is money green. I don't know why you continue.
You know, Rooney, but you know, it's like you're not listening. The guy that just signed with the Nets
turned down $7 million more to come to the Nets. What are you telling me? I mean, it's just, it, I mean, you're man, you're a guy. You're Ray Leonard says, sometimes it's not about the money. You know, it's about being the champ. Okay. Now, if you're saying money underlying issue, yeah. But it's not always about the money. And Jeter said that. Jeter said, hey, you know, let's just get this done. I mean, Jeter was, where was Derek Jeter going to go? He was going to play shortstop for the Mets? He was going to play shortstop for the Boston Red Sox? I mean, you...
No, they don't go to the Red Sox. No way.
I mean, your statement about, and now I understand money is an issue and money is the reason. But I'll buy that. That money is always an issue, but sometimes it's not the issue in the vein of it's always about the money because it's not always about the money. I mean,
but you look at an organization historically, Doc, that hired and fired a manager such as Billy Martin. I mean, that was comical.
No, Buck Showalter. I mean, that was something else.
Wow, you know, and that Buck Showalter thing too. You know, Buck. And me and Buck talked about that one time, man. And he said nobody got screwed worse than he did. The guy was manager of the year and got fired. Manager of the year.
Look at Joe Torre. Offered him. He said, you know what?
Well,
they kind of pointed him toward the door.
Yeah, he said that he'll go to. He's going to go to Boston too. And they said, we better keep him.
I'm talking about before when he left. In the contract they the contract that they offered him too. Excuse me, I'm kind of sneezing here. I don't know what's going on, but
the Jets cold. The Jets cold probably.
That's called the Sanchez sneeze.
Oh boy! The Sanchez butt fumble itch.
but you just look at the way you know they've hired how they handle some big names, even with
Now the point you bring up is so apropos. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is why there's a diverse intellect. You know, suppose this is a football guru expert. You know, Rooney is a WWF expert. Who's the best? And yet, their diverse intellect to delve into all subjects, in any sports, and in society, when sports and death is basically not only just sports, but it's the world. And you bring a point, and we go way back. Babe Ruth at one time, Joe DiMaggio was known to have problems. I mean, Joe set out, you know, through contract hassles. Known to set out with contract hassles, okay? And you know, we're talking about Jeter. I mean, we also look around.
Rolly Randolph could have been a manager there. He's never been a manager there.
Look at what the Knicks did to him. Look at the Knicks with Xavier McDaniels. They could have kept him another year. Bernard King with took him away.
The point that you guys are alluding to, too, is that, you know, New York, the Mecca of Communications, this big eastern metropolis, you know, New York has its share of racial problems and racial injustice and racial infractions against African-American athletes. I mean, first of all, you're right, Bernard King. I mean, Bernard had to prove himself. You know, the Yankees ran Reggie Jackson. They went for a lot of town. They removed Willie and Chris Chambliss so there'd be no automatic looking at them as manager once Torre would have gone. And then, you know, people don't remember that. You know, New York, you know, down at the Wall Street, man, they had a slave business that was so lucrative and so in-depth that New York itself was thinking about seceding from the Union to keep their slaves. New York itself was thinking about succeeding from the Union to keep their slaves. And you look at New York's track record, and you were there, Rooney, when we had that long conversation.
Look,
you were there when we had that conversation with Donovan McNabb and his parents. And then Jeff Blake had to leave New York to become a starting quarterback. But you were there with us. Why didn't the Jets get Donovan McNabb? Would have been perfect for Mark Sanchez. Perfect, Rooney.
Well, look, I don't know about all that, Doc, okay? But you don't have to go through all that about racism in New York being the same as it is in Alabama, okay? I mean, all you have to do is remember that there was a time when David Dinkins was the mayor of this city, when Staten Island was talking about succeeding. They were succeeding from New York and becoming some type of independent entity because David Dinkins was the mayor. I mean, we don't have to go 1,000 years back for this stuff.
Wow.
Staten Island wanted to succeed and made some kind of weak effort about succession because David Dinkins was a bad man. And who did he wind up with after that? That's to show where the city was, but then he wound up with Giuliani. It was a total disaster.
Point well taken.
And then when you see it's something about New York teams. Like I said, other than the Giants and the Yankees, the other teams seem to pick up star players when they're past their prime. The Mets, the Jets. You know, why can't these
Rangers,
teams pick
Rangers,
up
the Rangers,
the Rangers? Why can't they pick up these teams? These players, when they're good, they go, these players, whether it's in basketball, go to OKC, L.A., Miami, and then we pick them up, when they're all broken up and they're injury-prone, like Stat.
Well, it's really simple, see? It's because New York's all about star power and the big name. Unfortunately, like you said, they always get the superstars when they're past their prime, when they're no longer the guys that they were. Sure, they still have the name, but when they were named 4 or 5 years ago, and then New York gets them when, they're at the downside of their career, and there you go. New York loves the superstar name, they love the big name, but it's always after the guys that past their prime.
Yeah. It's mostly about publicity and seats and jersey sales. That's mostly all about. Fill up them seats and advertising and jersey sales and seats.
I'll tell you one thing. You look at the Madison Square Garden with the Knicks. Even when they were struggling under Isaiah and people fall asleep in the stands, including James Dolan, fall asleep in his chair there or as he said, he was looking down. I think it was recorded.
Down.
I mean, you have people still clamoring to get into Madison Square Garden.
Well, I mean, you have to understand it's the name. And you have to understand that the higher populace of people who go to sporting events are not African Americans. I mean, the middle class is out. I mean, I think two decades ago, we saw where the fan is no longer sitting downstairs. It's corporations. I mean, the corporation, he buys his fourth seat. He's got them for the year. We went to stand the last time. So it carries. And then, you still have, and what I found out, too, you have a higher populace of people who come out of the country who just want to go to Madison Square Garden. You get people who's incorporating their trip. They're coming to New York, and one of the things they want to do is go to the Knicks game, and that's great because they're not worried about sitting in Miami Heat, whoever the Knicks are playing. So it still has a mystique. I talked to Larry Torres the other day, and I was saying, the Barclays Center, it ain't Madison Square Garden.
But they're getting closer, Doc. They're going to become the next Garden. I can tell. I've been noticing that the athletes playing there, I wish the Nets would take a page out of their book. For instance, the wrestlers, and see, I'm sure you noticed this, the last couple of times WWE played the Barclays Center, you could see the guys really gave a little extra, because, obviously they're in New York, and at the Barclays Center, they gave an effort, Doc, worthy of the Garden. They usually save that kind of effort for when they play Madison Square Garden, which, the wrestlers love playing. But they gave a garden type of effort at the Barclays Center, so I see that Barclays is going to be the next big thing.
I said that before.
Well, it's the new toy. It's like a new toy when a kid plays with it for a while.
Exactly.
It's downtown is Brooklyn. I mean, Brooklyn's has come a long way. This city has come a long way in the past 20 years. But to Top Madison Square Garden, Midtown Manhattan, I just don't see them jumping ahead of Madison Square Garden. They're very popular, the Barclays Center. I mean, with the
they're getting a lot of concerts
like
there,
that.
A lot now.
I mean, they already took the Golden Gloves away from the Garden.
They already got the MTV Awards going to be there. Telling you, Barclays Center's on the rise, man.
The point that Shumi's made, it's a new kid on the block, all right? And he's hitting 300. But, you know, smoke clears. He's hitting 300, 340. But, you know, Melly Mays is still doing it. And it's not Madison Square Garden. And it's never going to be Madison Square Garden. And, you know,
Doctor, let's get some type of exception from this latest city council vote. In 10 years, the Garden is not going to be the Garden anyway, but they want to do a makeover of Sensation down there.
Yeah. They want
to
move it. They
want to give them a 10-year lease, only 10-year lease, and then let's only get some start negotiations like of another 2 or 3 years to try to get that 10-year lease expanded. He's going to have to move the Garden anyway in 10 years. And that's what's spending damn near $1 billion in renovation. So, you know,
I'm sorry.
No, I'm going to say, I believe the city council voted, I think it was 47-1, to give him a 10-year lease and a 10-year lease only. And I have to say, my guy was the only holdout of the 47-1, the one being Councilman Charles Barron.
Wow.
My guy, Charles Barron, always a rebel.
The key to really how well the Barclays Center does is how Nets do. And the acquisition of Pierce and Garnett is huge paper-wise, it's huge name-wise, but it's this year is just a huge year. If they can have a good year, an outstanding year, they can carry them over. But Pearson Garnett, especially Garnett, is injury prone. And, you know, what's going to happen when they give you 6-7 games in a row and they're gone for 4, 5, 6 games in a row? I just don't see them guys playing up to the caliber of basketball that they did in
Boston.
They're
a bit past their prime. But you don't understand. If these max players, Johnson and Williams, play, you know, like they give a damn this year and play like max players, you know, and then you have Lopez, who had his best year statistically, but I still think is kind of soft for a 7-footer, to be quite honest with you, but played his best ball statistically speaking. Well, you only need those guys on that end of here for 10, 12 minutes a game at their max. I mean, that's what you need. Their problem is not...
That's the point. Now, I saw them fitting and that kind of set up an atmosphere. I saw them sitting in L.A. with the Clippers, with the team that they had and the players they had. I saw them fitting there and playing a good 2 or maybe 3 years. Here, do the Nets have the players that can complement them and suffice to cover up, you know, their shortcomings now that they're no longer, you know, they're a little long in the tooth there and when they get hurt? I just thought that L.A. was a better fit because of course, the coach, Doc, our boy Doc, but also because of the fact that they had the personnel that they wouldn't have to play as hard and they wouldn't have to prove themselves. I think they're going to have to play really hard. Yeah.
Doc, the Nets right now, in my humble opinion, 1-5, 1-7, are as talented as any team in the East, okay, as far as I'm concerned. Right now, 1-5, 1-7, they have as much talent as any team in the East, including Miami. What they need is a heart transplant and have a little swag. That's what they need, okay? I mean, that's not like that. What they need is a heart transplant and a little swag. That's what they need.
No, they need to go to the Wizard of Oz to get some courage.
But I think the thing with the Nets is they will always be second fiddle to the Knicks, the same as the Mets to the Yankees and Jets to the Giants. I mean, you compare an apple and oranges when you look at the franchises, just for the longevity and the history.
They make money.
Oops, Malcolm. So, Wing said something before. You know, it people come to the Garden regardless. The Knicks making the playoffs or not. If the Knicks make the playoffs, it only enhances the plus factor that the Knicks make every year. I mean, if the Knicks make the playoffs, it just okay. So now they're going to do a lot better. But they're building new things. They're reconstructing things. I mean, the Garden has the name. It has a name. It's where you want to play. It's where you want to fight. I mean, even Mayweather admitted that he liked to fight there, and it's special and unique on your resume. Especially unique on your resume. I just feel, and it's a great subject, I just think that this year is the year to tell if the Barkley's for real or not. And now the question will be, if Madison Square Garden does go, that even enhances the legend to say, I once was there. It's no longer there. So now the mindset is that the Barkley is, it wins by forfeit. But, it's a win, but it's not like winning right out. So it's very, I think somehow the deal's going to get done. I mean, understand, Madison Square Garden wasn't always where it is now. That's the third garden. So you can move the garden someplace in Manhattan again and take the name with it. But, the Barkley Center is in the garden. I remember when Bernard Hopkins fought there. I mean, I went to the fight. There was no excitement at the fight. Nobody was. I mean, there were some people like, I never forget it. Like, what's happening here? It's a fight tonight. Excuse me. We're talking about Bernard Hopkins, the oldest man to win a world championship, the most title defenses by any middleweight in the history of boxing. And the people were like, well, who's fighting here? Nobody walks in front of the Garden. And I know what's going on. And Hoopsa made the point since then. Made the point that it's the Garden, it's the Garden, man. Talking to my travel agent, her boss was telling me that there were some people who were coming to New York and wanted the thing they wanted to do. They wanted to go to the Garden. So now if they come to in January 10th, they're not coming when the Miami's playing or the Lakers are playing or San Antonio's playing. Maybe Detroit's coming in, but the point is what they want to say is I went to the Garden. I think the Barclays Center has been great for no other reason. You have to travel all the way to Jersey to see the Nets. And it's a place that I think right now to validate what the Hoopster and Rooney are saying, I think in all the world it's the place that has had the second highest populace of people visited. I mean, it's in the top two or three spots in the world right now. But the question is, as Wing said, what's his longevity going to be like? 5 years from now, 10 years from now, are they going to be talking about the Barclays Center? I mean, people are talking about a fight that happened 50 years ago back at Madison Square Garden or track meet.
Yeah, that's because you had Ali Frazier.
Well, no, I'm not even talking about Ali Frazier. I mean, I'm just talking about people who are talking about a fight that Ray Robson had back in the 40s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or a basketball game.
When you think of the Garden, you think of Ali Frazier. One. That's the one you think of when you think of Madison Square Garden.
Ali Frazier, one, is the pinnacle of the Garden, but you think of Oscar Robertson coming in. I thought you meant simply. Yeah, I mean, but you also think Oscar Robertson scoring 56 points his first game ever. His first game
for Madison. But a lot of people don't remember that, though, Doc. A lot of folks don't remember.
I'm just saying from a historical standpoint of view, though, the Garden has that to fall back on. Barclays Center just doesn't have that just yet.
You don't even have the star celebrity power there. I mean, you don't even have the star and celebrity that you have in Madison Square Garden. I think I was talking to you, Hoopster, not too far back about you look at
New York, Chicago, and L.A. Yeah, Chicago has, you know, a couple of celebrities there, even Miami. L.A., you have, you know, Jack Nicholson and a couple of stars there as well. But I haven't seen the amount of stars in one arena doing one game than at Madison Square Garden at one time. L.A. is probably the second one behind New York, but just to see you, you always got Spike Lee is always on celebrity role, probably the most famous.
No, it's mostly Whoopi Goldberg. She's a big Knicks fan.
You know.
And then Edie Falco.
It seems like everybody comes there. I mean, it's just I'm at Madison Square Garden. It's something about the name. I don't know.
Like I said, they don't start winning. I don't know. It won't be Madison Nutting Garden. They don't start winning. You know what I'm saying?
The Knicks are not the only thing that makes Madison Square Garden go. But now I tell you what has been a detriment to the Garden, but they no longer have a boxing department, but they're still able to have people coming in.
That's another thing, and
rent a big fight still. I mean, all I have to do is promoter, because as a promoter now, I think it depends on what kind of deal the Barclays Center is presenting.
Yeah, they've been getting a lot of fights there lately, Doc.
I remember McLeod who fought Brennan Hopkins, and I asked him, I said, on your resume, do you want your daughter to say that, you know, somewhere in my career I fought Madison Garden? And he said something that is leaning toward what you and Mel said. You know, he said the Barclays Center is the new Madison Garden. Let's get back to Johnny Manziel, football-wise, this is the allegation that he took some monies and stuff like that. So now, you kind of kept saying he's out of control. That means two things. He's got to send him his act, or he's got to get out of college football and get into the pros. Can this getting into the pros, would that help mature him or put him in an atmosphere where he can't get away or do some of the things he's doing right now?
I mean, I've listened to a different amount of sportscasters and journalists throughout the, sports world, and there were some people saying that, oh, this is his opportunity to go to the NFL. I mean, he's not ready. Mm-hmm. He's not ready. I mean, not only would it change, it would magnify the situation for him. I think it would be a big detriment right now to go into the NFL. I don't even think a team would take him at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is his breakout year. I mean, it's more or less a name. Oh, Johnny Manziel, not to take anything away from him, the way that he beat, they beat Alabama. But, there have been some high-profile athletes coming out of college, whether it be LeBron James with the it was allegations that he received money in the car and different things like that. Reggie Bush, it's a list of so many high-profile athletes.
Absolutely.
And I think that he really has to look within himself and take a step or two back and look and say, what am I doing here? I mean, I would hope that he didn't take any money with his family, with the amount of wealth that they do have, why he would even risk not only his stature in college football, but his NFL future, if that's where he wants to go. I mean, going into NFL right now would be a big detriment. And remember, many years ago, Michael Strahan was one of the big leaders to fight against these kids coming into college at such a young age and in the early time. Because football is, like I said, a very unique sport. You look at the size of the college players compared to the NFL players. I don't know what they're feeding these guys and their workout regimens, but these guys blow up. They make biogenesis look like a can of tuna fish.
Kids play.
You know, so he's definitely not ready for that. I mean, he wasn't even ready for this Heisman Trophy.
Well, NFL okay, here's the question, did he basically live off the Alabama win?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That was a big upset. I never thought that was a – they play him again the third game. They also heard he had a lawyer. He'll be playing. He'll be back playing.
It was talking about suspensions, but – I think that was his one marquee game, his breakout game, and that really put him on the map. But that's not to say that he's going to be successful in the NFL. I mean, look at Chris Winkie. Excellent quarterback for the Seminoles. I watched him all throughout college. He came to the NFL. He basically was buried.
Well, we can name another. Danny Cannell. We can name a lot of few quarterbacks who came in and failed.
Really? Rooney, I know you're thinking. Come on, jump in here, Rooney.
Well, I just kind of agree with what she said, Doc. I mean, the kid's just not mature enough at this point, you know, to be in the NFL. He's certainly not a leader of men. Mm-hmm. I mean, the kid's, like you said, not really ready yet.
The classic line, certainly not a leader of men. What, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you can't talk this through. A classic line. So, I mean, here's a guy can't even lead himself. Tremendous point. And, you know, and that whole idea about being a quarterback is you are this leader of the team. And the line, Rooney, just a point well taken, dovetailed by a good friend, Harold Wester, said and touching. You know, you're right, Rooney, not a leader of men in a position where he should be, you know, and it's just –
But he sells himself short too, Doc. He says, I'm a 20-year-old kid. So you're telling me a 20-year-old kid, quote unquote, is going to go into a huddle with these 280-pound, 300-pound grown men? You think they'll eat him alive in that huddle? At least we talk so much and criticize a quarterback like Mark Sanchez. But like I said before, at training camp that first week, you could see the leadership that he commanded, and that's a big thing, especially amongst
how much is that leadership? And I saw it after the football game yesterday. How much is that sympathy? How much is that guys rallying around him because they feel bad? How much is that? Hey man, you know what? Let's support. Let's help this guy. Okay, this guy is not. So how much of that is leadership? How much of that is support? How much of that is sympathy? And I saw the guys after the game. You know, guys, hey man, you know, guys had a tough time, and you commend the human spirit and the camaraderie and the unison and the support. And he plays. He's still talking to the guys, talking. But you said, and you're the best to do this, one of the best ever to do it. But how much of this rallying around him is also by deduction? Gino's a rookie. Well, I mean, would they have rallied around Donovan McNabb? Or would they rally around Burrell? You know, would they rally around
Vic?
Brett Favre? I mean, the question is, would they have rallied around a seasoned pro who has been there as a backup? I don't think they rally around Geno because he's rookie. But the question is, would they have rallied around a seasoned pro who would have been there, a guy that had some name, some markability? And you say they're rallying around him. You show the leadership. What's not to say though, if you had somebody of markability, somebody of notoriety, somebody that has played this game, like I said, I'm thinking McNabb, I'm thinking Brett Favre. You know, I'm thinking. I just can't think of the guy, the backup quarterback, who's starting quarterback for the Minnesota. But I'm just talking about another pro. Would they rally around? Would they have given him the support? And the question we got to get from myself: how much of this support for him is support and sympathy for with Mark Sanchez this evening.
I didn't get the vibe that it was more or less sympathy. You could see the chemistry.
Support. Okay.
The chemistry between him and the seasoned veterans that are still there. I mean, you even look at a second-year player like Stephen Hill. I mean, you can tell the difference. They're leaders and they're followers. They're people, three people in this world. They're people that make things happen. They're people that wonder what happened. And there are people that say, how did that happen? And I still see the leadership ability in Mark Sanchez, and I see how the team rallied around him in training camp. So I think it's very little sympathy, because sympathy doesn't win football games.
Okay, support. Maybe I used the wrong word. How much is this support then?
Well, they definitely support him. You can see it until he actually, I guess, falls completely apart. But you're only as strong as your support mechanism, and these guys are supporting them. They're around them, supporting them. Some of these guys were there, with the postseason games and wins. It's definitely a different team than it was then, but you know, he has a resume. Other than just fumbling the ball or takeaways or throwing INTs.
A point well taken. I mean, people forget this guy started out last year as starting quarterback. This guy started out last year a whole different mindset. But like you said, some things happen. And, you know, maybe he can turn it around. And no question, he is the starting quarterback. And more importantly, what you're saying here, Todd Stanley Sports, the Blog Talk Radio, and the Trust and Garden Network, he earned it. And with that, we're going to let Rooney earn us out of here. Mel Coast, tell Smith Jr., please tell the people good night. All right. We'll let Larry say it first.
Thank you for joining us for this installment of Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us, and please tell a friend about Sports in Depth, heard every Wednesday.
And with that, now, Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a.k.a.
I was just
flipping
my charger here.
And
he was changing his tights.
Listen, hey, put the mask back on and hand see wings to Kate. Now say goodnight.
The doctor, the Sports in Depth Nation's been here. The Sports in Depth panel's been here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Trust in God, the radio network. And the straw that serves the drink has been here. And that's been the incomparable Doc Sam. Thank you, the doctor.
Thank you, Rudy. And as always, we thank you for being our support today. I leave you with three thoughts. Live your life today and get the same before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing to love it? Service to others is rent you pay for your space here on earth. I simply say,
the bells won't be ringing. Who really cares? Who really cares? Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world?
To save a world.
That's destined to
that
die.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world,
when I look at the world,
it fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today,
children today,
really gonna suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
We can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live for life.
Live for life. Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Save the babies. Save the babies. And if you want to live, but who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Yeah, to save our world. Yeah, to save our sweet world. To save a world that is destined.